For equity, for access to computer science, these math courses are going to be a cornerstone of how we get computer science skills across the state, into the rural areas, into the urban schools, and so privileged to be a part of that project.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I am excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And today we are going to be talking with Chris Orban, who we've had on the show before. So we're super excited to have him back. It's been a hot minute. Lots of things have happened in the world since we spoke with Chris last. And as always, he's been super busy in the weeds doing amazing things for education. And so, as a reminder, Chris Orban is an Ohio State University physics professor who's been actively involved with the Ohio Math Pathways Project, and he's got lots of intersections that we're going to hear all about as part of this conversation. So, Chris, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Super excited to have you back. And for those who might not recall, let's just set a little bit of context for our listeners. Chris is an associate professor in the physics department at Ohio State University, and he is a computational physicist and education researcher with experience working with all kinds of K-12 schools, including the Metro Early College High School, Columbus City Schools, and the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce. In 2017, Orban co-founded the STEM Coding Project, which is an effort to thoughtfully integrate computer science and data science into high school math and science classes. So as you can see, Chris is pretty much a renaissance man when it comes to the really complicated elements of what lots of folks are like, I can't do that. Chris can help you figure out how you can, in fact, do that. So Chris, as we get started here, first and foremost, we're going to talk today about your work on the Math Pathways Project. So help our listeners who come to us from all over the world understand what the heck are we even talking about when we say this Math Pathways Project, and why should we care about this? Because it's really important.
Absolutely. The first thing I should say is that I don't speak on behalf of the Math Pathways Project, that my technical title is I am a member of the writing committee for the discrete math curriculum. So I'm here as an observer of the Math Pathways to tell you what I've observed, and you should go to the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce to get any kind of definitive information about them. But let me paint the picture of how I got involved in that. So we had an in-person meeting in January of 2020, and then we had a whole kickoff. And so this was just rethinking high school mathematics, sort of allowing students to take different options to be able to satisfy the required math credits in Ohio high schools. So everybody got together in the basement of the Ohio Department of Education downtown. And we just got to work thinking about what kind of standards are we going to do, how are we going to rethink this thing, what kind of curriculum are we going to do. But another way to explain it is that we are in the middle of the biggest experiment in American math education in more than a generation. We've had Algebra 2 as this kind of weed-out course for the longest time, and in the mid-2000s, and I'd love to talk about this more because I get into the education research and all that, right? In the mid-2000s, they did some experiments and realized that Algebra 2 is maybe not the best choice for every kid. And in the wake of those experiments, people started talking about, well, what if we did something else? What if we did data science? What if we did discrete math? What if we did, it's called applied quantitative reasoning. So something that's sort of like, you know, instead of Algebra 2, maybe Algebra 1.5, where we're sort of more hands-on and more practical with the knowledge. And so we are in the middle of this big math experiment all over the country. And Ohio is actually a leader in this. And that's really the main reason that I'm coming on your podcast, to be perfectly honest, is because people don't know that Ohio is a leader. People read in the news that, okay, we're ranked 30th out of 50 or something as far as education in the states. But when it comes to rethinking high school math, we're right up there at the top. We were the first state to do a state government-led statewide data science pilot. California is ahead of the curve on a lot of things, but they weren't ahead on that, right? So they had, you know, Los Angeles data science pilot. They had Bay Area data science pilot. They didn't do it statewide. We were the first ones.
I appreciate that very much. And thank you for sort of setting that context for our listeners. I would also like to add, as we sort of dig into this a little bit, that, you know, from a research standpoint, we are in complete agreement and alignment, because the work that we've been doing for the last 25 years at PAST, we've been seeing the same things as it relates to math and math education and the way that that just needs to be rethought. We also believe very strongly that from a set of literacies, that there's incredible research and data that supports that math and mathematical literacies, and, you know, there's lots of words being tossed around there, make a much, much bigger and long-term difference than traditional reading and writing literacies. They're both super important. We're not minimizing one over the other. But you can't be truly literate if you don't have a real solid understanding of mathematical understanding and knowledge. And so, you know, as we think about the opportunities that are out there, right, and the desperate need to get more people to be comfortable with mathematics and the various ways you might think about that, that really sort of led the state to circle all the way back around for that context component for our listeners to really say, we need to pull together a group of really innovative and creative thinkers in the mathematics space in the state. And we need to craft a working group, and we need to really roll up our sleeves and think about this differently, which is how you came to be involved in this project. And I want to be really clear, the reason I wanted to have the conversation with you is we really wanted to be able to talk to people who were in the weeds of the work so that we could understand the why and your perspective and the lens that you bring to this conversation, right? And so I'm super curious, Chris, as this process has sort of gone along, there's been numerous stages to it, as you already indicated, you know, in terms of the way that it got started. But I'm really curious from you, where were some aha moments in the work that you were doing? Because you've had many pieces of experience with this.
Yeah, well, we had that in-person meeting in January of 2020, and then the pandemic hit 2 months later, and just everything was done online. We designed this whole course and just many, many, many hours of meetings with the Ohio Department. I feel like if there was awards for hours of meetings at Ohio Department of Education, I might get an honorable mention from all this. But it was fun for me because I'm a physicist, and I teach physics classes. I mean, part of what makes me skilled at coming up with stuff for high school is that a lot of the kids that I teach are, you know, 19 years old, basically, because I teach freshman physics courses at Ohio State. And so it's fun for me to go into the math world. And for me, with my background in physics, it was a whole education in what's involved in designing a math class. What are the goals of a math class? Because as a physicist, for me, math is kind of a tool. I think of math as a tool. I think of computers as a tool. I don't tend to think of math as like there's these concepts in math that if the students don't get, then they're going to be deprived of something, right? So it was an education for me to go over the math standards in the state of Ohio and to pore over it and see what does it say. So here's a shocking thing for me. Here was a surprise for me, and part of what I think we should be thinking about but are not. But binary numbers, right? Ones and zeros, this is how computers work, appear nowhere in most math standards in most states. They appear nowhere in the Ohio math standards. They don't appear in Common Core. And we included in the discrete math curriculum. So I was going to make sure that happened, right? But it surprises me that there hasn't been more of a conversation on a national level where the people that want to put more computer science in schools, for whatever reason, they're not talking to the math teachers saying, like, would it be possible to put just some ones and zeros in there, right? Because a lot of math teachers, they know about binary numbers. That's not a big deal to them, right? But it's so fundamental to what computers do and managing memory and stuff like that. So part of what gives me an interesting perspective on it is that I'm not coming at this from having taught high school math for the last 20 years, you know? I'm coming at this with some fresh ideas, and I use computers to solve science problems. I use computers to solve math problems. I do fun stuff on my YouTube channel on how to calculate the digits of pi. I really wanted to get that in the course, but they didn't think that was good. So it was fine. It's no hard feelings. But it was a real education and what's involved in a math course and what are those goals.
And I would also, you know, like to point out that, you know, as a physics professor who teaches freshmen, again, you know, it's interesting to me because I think that you're the perfect person to put on this working group, because we need both our traditional K-12 educators in the middle of that work, but we also then need the recipients of those kids in that work, right? And so because you teach freshmen and because you're teaching physics and not just purely mathematics, you're getting those kids and you are able to connect the dots about really what do they know? Like, how prepared are they? You get to see gaps because you're using this also from an applied perspective. I mean, in many ways, I think that's just perfect. So I just wanted to say that out loud, because in my mind, it makes total sense that you're involved in this work. Okay, so now let's peel this back just a little bit to just sort of talk about the work itself. So ultimately, as the working group sort of goes through its process, what is it that the state is hoping to achieve from this work? If you step back from it and say, why this work? And we already talked about the why now, but ultimately, where do you feel like this all lands? And what's the status of this right now, today?
Yeah, so the value of the course, from my point of view, is that in Ohio currently, only about half of all high schools have a computer science teacher, right? And, you know, we both work very closely with Metro High School. For about 2 years there, Metro High School didn't have a computer science teacher. They have one now, and she's great. But it's not unusual for these schools to not have one. And the beauty of these math pathways courses, the data science and the discrete math, is that they are math courses that are aligned with the Ohio computer science standards, but they can be taught by math teachers even if they do not have the credentials to teach computer science. Because only about half of Ohio high schools have a computer science course, but even in the ones that do, that computer science teacher can't teach every kid how to code, right? In Ohio, I think it's maybe 1 in 5 students or 1 in 7 students actually manage to take a computer science course before they graduate high school. And so you got 4 to 5 kids who might not be able to take a computer science course even if they wanted to. And so for equity, for access to computer science, these math courses are going to be a cornerstone of how we get computer science skills across the state into the rural areas, into the urban schools, all over the place. And I am so privileged to be a part of that project.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
It is an issue, right? And we also know that nationally, this is not unique to Ohio. The lack of access to high quality computer science at very young ages, right? We know that it's a problem. So it's not just Ohio that doesn't have enough computer science teachers. So,
well, if I can just jump in there, so that's correct. It's, you know, nationally the numbers are similar, but Ohio does lag the national numbers just a little bit with computer science access in high school.
Yeah, we do. And there's some interesting reasons why it's happening in Ohio that are not necessarily relevant at the moment. But the good news is there's so much work that's happening to try to rectify this, including the math pathway opportunity, as you said, you know, to try to bridge that gap. Because we do have more kids in our schools than have the ability to ever take a computer science course, if it's even offered in your school. We just don't have enough people to make sure that every single kid has the opportunity. So that's one of the things I really actually liked about this, is the fact that it was trying to do everything possible in a scenario that's not ideal to find a way to provide an equitable opportunity. So I appreciate that. So, you know, as this work is going through, what is the status of this right now? So I'm a kid in Ohio, or I'm a teacher in Ohio. What does that mean for me in this moment as it relates to this?
Yeah, so each summer, the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce, in partnership with the Educational Service Centers, has been doing trainings for teachers for new data science and new discrete math teachers. I'm involved some in the training of the discrete math teachers. And I can't give you definitive numbers, but my understanding is that there's about 40-ish, maybe 40 or 50 discrete math teachers in Ohio. Discrete math, for example, is at Metro High School. Metro is the first high school to do it, actually. It's at Olentangy. It's a few other places. Data science, there's more data science teachers. There might be 60 or 70. Again, these are not official numbers, but data science is... it's in Olentangy, it's in Columbus City Schools, and a couple of others. Discrete math is also in Horizon Science Academy on Morris Road, is my understanding. So it started from just a few teachers, and now it's really become a thing.
And it's great that it's become a thing. And it's also really interesting. I guess I'm curious, and again, I want to be really clear with our listeners that you're not here representing the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce. But
this is me nodding. You
absolutely
can't see me nodding, but I'm nodding in approval
exactly.
of this statement. Yes.
But I do want to ask you this question, because I'm super curious from your perspective, again, as you know, somebody who teaches freshman physics and all of the associated elements of that. You're in a space where, again, you're inheriting, if you will, or these students are matriculating into your program, into your space. So I think you have value there. But I'm super curious about the data science piece, right? Because there's some interesting developments that have been happening nationally as it relates to high school data science, and specifically the development of data science standards at the state level. And so, to your knowledge, where does that sit currently in Ohio?
Like, how is the... are students enjoying the course? Is that, I mean, how should we frame this question exactly?
I guess I'm trying to get a little bit more granular than that, right? Because, you know, we have a good handle on math standards and coursework that has been or is in development to further pure mathematical education within the state, right? And it's interesting, as data science and computer science have really sort of come online, if you will, within the state, there's been some fascinating work in other places. I'm thinking about, for example, the state of Virginia is the first state in the nation that actually legislated data science standards on behalf of all students in the state. That's a really, really big leap. It's complicated, as we know, adding new stuff in or adding more stuff in without replacing some of the old stuff that we don't really need anymore, which is one of the things I thought was really interesting, is the way the math working group was sort of tasked, if you will, to say, look, we know this is what research used to tell us, but now we've got new research and this is what we've learned. So we're going to start work, you know, down this road to make some modifications. The same thing for our listeners is happening as it relates to technology. There's technology working groups within the state as well. I participated in some of that.
So what was supposed to happen was that these academic standards get updated periodically. So I was part of the science standards revision team in 2017, 2018. I contributed some to the update of the computer science standards in 2022. And the calendar said it was time for an update of the math standards, right? So we were all excited to update the math standards because we were creating this discrete math course and we were poring over the Ohio math standards. And it was often the case where there was an activity that made sense from a discrete math perspective, right? That made sense from like, well, this is sort of what they do in the college discrete math, but it's sort of more on a high school level. But there wasn't any analogy to it in the Ohio math standards. Or same thing with data science, is that there might be some data science concept that you would get in a college data science class that you can kind of simplify for a high school audience, but there wasn't any analogy for it in the Ohio math standards. I mean, there's some, like there's statistics and there's data analysis in the Ohio math standards. There's not nothing, but it definitely was not written to encourage data science. And that's kind of a loss for teachers, because at the end of the day, these standards, I mean, on one level, the textbook writers, they look at these standards and they create content from that, or like the curriculum writers like me create it. On another level, it's giving teachers permission to do stuff, right? So like the update to the computer science standards was, you can talk about artificial intelligence, you can talk about quantum computing, and that's A-okay, and you can do that, and you can tell the parents and your principals that you're in alignment with the Ohio computer science standards. So we were really excited to do that with data science and discrete math. But what happened was that in the last year, there were some legislative changes. And so for many decades, the State Board of Education was in charge of the academic standards. So, you know, I would serve on a committee, you would serve on a committee, and then the final version goes in front of the State Board of Education. They vote to approve that. Hopefully they vote to approve that because we put all the work into it, right? But what happened in the last year is that the legislature kind of did an overhaul of the state board, and now those academic standards, the science, computer science, math, social studies, et cetera, those are now under the governor's office. Also with that, the Ohio Department of Education changed the Ohio Department of Workforce. And for all these reasons, the scheduled update to the math standards got postponed. So if the governor is listening to this, where is my math updates, my math revision updates? And it's a personal issue for me. You know why? Because I helped update the science standards in 2017. I updated like the astronomy section. One of my suggestions for the computer science standards did go into the updated computer science standards. And I was ready to make some updates to the math standards. That's a hat trick in hockey, right? I was really excited to make an update to the math standards, but I've been deprived of that opportunity. So, Mr. DeWine, we'd like to have our math revisions, if you will.
And those revisions, those constant relooking, as we all know, super, super important. You know, the whole nation and other parts of the world, we're collectively struggling with the idea of what is education in our sort of current time and space. And it's a complicated one, and there's so many different things get thrown at it. But just the opportunity to constantly go in and think about the standards, the what we teach, the why we teach it, super, super important. So I agree. I don't know anybody that wouldn't advocate for let's keep doing this work. It's important and meaningful work to roll up our sleeves. You know, I'm always trying to be mindful of thinking about the folks that are listening, and they do come to us from all over the world. So not just from Ohio, and certainly not even just from the U.S. So I'm really curious, Chris, if we could sort of close out this conversation with thinking a little bit about sort of the broader work that you do, right? So your experience, your interface with students, you know, one of the things that you're noted to being really great at is being super, super creative with helping students know how to learn, whatever the concept happens to be. So share with us just a little bit, because, you know, the reality is as these new things come about, so data science or new ways of thinking about math, take your pick. It could be anything across the spectrum. Sometimes those things can be daunting for educators who haven't either, you know, been part of the design development of what that new thing is, or it's just not something I'm comfortable or familiar. I've had a lot of exposure to. So it's not just for kids that sometimes struggle to figure out how to dive into these concepts, but as adults, we have those same struggles. Yeah, you've gotten really creative. So share with us if you're one, you know, for those teachers that are out there that are like, okay, I know I'm supposed to do this, or I even really want to do this, but I'm terrified to do this thing. Because you're super creative and you've created lots of things. So share with us how you would go about that.
Sure. So here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to give a list of fun things that are actually in the discrete math course that I kind of helped to suggest that they go into the discrete math course. You and I have been around for a while. Do you remember Minesweeper on Windows 95?
Yeah.
So Minesweeper, you can use Minesweeper to teach a part of discrete math called set theory. Because there's a mathematical notation for things that are in a group. And a lot of times in Minesweeper, you're saying, all right, well, this square is next to these squares. So these squares in a group and these squares in a group. And so the overlap is this square. And should there be a mine there or not? And you can actually write it all out in formal set theory. So, but before you do all the set theory, before you learn all the notation, you get to play Minesweeper for like a half hour. Mm-hmm. And, you know, growing up on it, it was really fun. But if you play it now, you realize how hard it is. Minesweeper is a really hard game.
Yeah.
And sometimes you really have to hit the books to figure out exactly like where these mines are going to be. So for the Ohio students out there playing Minesweeper in their math class, you can thank me for that. It had to be approved by the committee, but it was sort of my suggestion to do it. Another fun thing that we do in the class is that, so you remember Mario 64 on the Nintendo 64? It came out when I was in high school. So there's these flaws in Mario 64. So for example, if you get more than 1,000 coins or something, that the number of coins you have goes negative or something like that. Like there's all these like weird little glitches in Mario 64. Like if you run fast enough, you can get to a parallel universe. Like so there's all these weird things. And it all boils down to the fact that when they were writing Mario 64, they were limited in how much computer memory they had. Mm-hmm. And so they used certain kinds of numbers in the computer that had the limitations on how big they could get. And so we talk about how in binary code, we talked about binary code earlier, we talked about how in binary code, you naturally have those limits of what's the biggest number you can do, what's the smallest number you can do. We talk about how you send messages over the internet, right? Cryptography. How can you send a message that you know is going to be intercepted, but if someone intercepts it, it is very unlikely they'll be able to figure out what that message is. And then I'm married to a woman from Dayton. So this story is, I'm really happy that I can highlight Dayton, Ohio in this. But during World War II, Dayton, Ohio, which is where a National Cash Register was located, was very involved in the effort to decrypt German and Japanese messages with the Enigma machine. A guy named Joseph Desch did a lot of that work. And one of the things that I suggested for the discrete math curriculum that the committee approved was just talking about Joseph Desch and showing the documentary that some of his kids made as part of the organization that celebrates his history. And the reason you probably haven't heard of Joseph, have you heard of Joseph Desch, by the way?
I have not.
The reason you haven't heard of Joseph Desch is because all of this work that he did was super top secret, was not declassified until the mid-90s.
Wow.
And so I think it's great to be able to highlight Ohio history, mm-hmm. teach math, teach computer science all at the same time. And that's just like a handful of the fun ideas that we were able to put in that course.
Yeah. And that's awesome because it's engaging and intriguing to kids, right? So that's spectacular.
History teaches history too, you know?
You get it all.
STEAM, I guess, right?
Exactly. Thank you so much, Chris, both for joining us today, but also, honestly, for being willing to roll up your sleeves and be part of the work that needs to happen, not just in Ohio, but, you know, for math education generally. You know, I always argue that we need more math and we need it everywhere. It needs to be infused in everything that we learn because there's nothing that we do that doesn't involve mathematics. So for that alone, I celebrate the fact that you opted in. So thank you for that. And thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a joy to be here.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.